politique. Comment est monté le président, on a besoin de l'intérêt. Je vais essayer de pouvoir voir les choses que vous avez expliqué, mais pas besoin de M. Chokumar. Il s'est fait un arrêt pour le comité médical, mais on ne sait pas encore ce que c'est.
Those are the apologies. Our CTO, they are going to make a presentation to us. You will introduce your team.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Estelle Sikan. I'm currently the acting chief procurement officer. For the time being, until the return of a permanent member. The advertisement for the CPO was specified last year and closed on the 27th of January. So they are busy shortlisting candidates, just for information sake. And then I have here Basali Data. She is our chief editor in supply chain management, governance and compliance management. So she will do most of the deliberation. So in essence, we are giving you feedback on the deviations and expansions for the first quarter, and which span from September to December. So just before we start, there are a couple of, or there's specific one instruction that gives us the scenarios under which departments can apply for deviations, expansions, or variations, and that's instruction note number 3 of 2016-17. And departments can request for deviations under the following circumstances. Firstly, they can, if under emergency and sole supplier, but that is within the ambit of the accounting officer to approve, and then they just report it within 10 working days to the National Treasury and to the AG. Then, just the definition of emergency procurement is when it occurs, that there is a serious and unexpected situation that poses an immediate risk on health, life, property, or environment, which calls for a government institution to immediately react and when it's impractical to go out on a competitive bid. And then sole source procurement is when there is definite proof that this is the only company or only service provider that can render the service. It is different from what we call single source. The sole source is one only single, there might be more, but it's limited. And then we say that the accounting officers must invite as many suppliers as possible and then select the preferred based on the competitive bidding process. And then any other deviation is allowed under exceptional circumstances and based on written approval from the relevant treasury. Then also on instruction note 3, there is also a provision made for expansions or variations, and that is usually where accounting officers can ask for variation if it's more than 20% or 20 million on construction type of work, and 15% of all 50 million, 15 million for other goods and services. This we found, and you will also probably see it in the presentation, this poses quite a big problem for our SOC because of the magnitude of the projects that they work with. So any deviation in excess of this prescribed threshold has to come to Treasury for approval. So just to give you some statistics on deviation, we have received in that period a total of 235 applications, and 148 of those are the top 20 that we are presenting to you today. So it's about 63%. So the top 20 makes up 63% of the number, in terms of the number of applications. Then on the value of those deviations, we have a total of 11.5 billion for that quarter, of which 7.3 billion is the top 20. So the top 20 makes up 64% of the 11 billion. Although it shows 64%, it's only 4 applications that were not addressed in terms of the numbers. And one of them is a very high one, it's about 3.8 billion. So there's only 4 outstanding of, so the top 20 is about, makes up the bigger part of the number. Then on slide 9, we will just see in terms of the institutions, in terms of the rand value, we will see that Transnet, Eskom, and Prasa, as well as definitely Northern Water, makes up quite a large chunk of the applications in terms of value, of which Transnet is about 1.7 billion, Eskom about 1.4 billion, Prasa just on a billion there. So if we go to the numbers, you'll see a different story. It shows that the South African Police Service has got the biggest number of applications, but in terms of the value, police is somewhere in the middle in terms of value. So it just shows that the police is requesting quite a lot of applications, but the smaller value. We also see the NAL and CITO and environmental affairs as the top 4 in terms of the number of applications that are outstanding. On page 10, you'll just find the exact values. So if we look at Transnet, it shows 1.6, 1.7 billion, and that is made up of 9 applications. So you can just look at the table and you can see the number of applications that makes up that the total value of the request. And when we talk about total value, it's the financial implication of that, financial implication of that application or applications. And also if you go to slide 11, it just carries on from number 1 to number 20 in terms of the top 20 departments or institutions that makes up the 7.3 billion. If we then go to expansion, and expansion means going over the threshold of 20%, 20 million, 15%, 15 million, there we will see a total for that quarter we have received about 223 applications, and just for interest rate, 99% of 99 after 223, which is 44%, is the top 20. So the top 20 is making 4% of the total value. In terms of value, we have a total of 7.58 billion and 5.8 billion is the top 20. So 7%. The top 20 makes 7% of the total value. Thank you. conditional support or support or not supported, or in other cases it's just for notary purposes, and some of the applications are also within the county office's mandate to have approved.
Can you just repeat the definition of expansion?
Expansion is in the contract, value is expanded or increased beyond 15% or 15 million in terms of normal goods and services, or 20% or 20 million in terms of construction work and services. You will find that definition also on the fourth slide. So 20% of the contract value, or 20 million. 15% or 15 million. And as I said earlier, if we look at the kind of project that Transnet and Eskom and Fraser are dealing with, this provision makes it very difficult for them, because it means that they have to apply for expansion.
It looks like the slides are not the same.
I don't have the spot.
Start for page
2. No, I think it's the
previous page.
I hope that.
Some instances they also ask to deviate from the competitive bidding process to go on a closed bid, which is not unfamiliar. That usually happens when there's only a limited number of suppliers in the market. And usually this is related to original equipment manufacturers, where there's only a limited number of, say for example, oncology machines. Other reason is for business continuity, and that we see sometimes in ERP systems, that they want to either add extra modules of an existing ERP. So I'm trying to give you examples of what we mean by this. Then what we find recently, especially with our FOCs in the turnaround strategy, is that they come to Treasury to ask for specific dispensations for a period of time to assist them with fast-tracking the procurement processes. And that is what is meant by the fourth bullet. Service delivery urgency. There we have a case from the Department of Basic Education on cyclic genes that they wanted to quickly expedite. And then we also find quite a lot on current contracts that that they want to extend because the new tender process is not finalized. So it shows on poor planning. Or that they underestimated the number of tenders that they had to evaluate. So that comes quite a lot. Or failed tender processes, where there was a non-award in a tender process, and then they had to restart the process. And that is also when they ask us for extension of current contracts so that they can restart the new process. In a lot of cases, we also see that they have value for money. We had a case where they could buy, say for example, two second-hand type of cranes, say for Bridge Elizabeth Harbour, which is under guarantee, warranty, everything at about 50% of the price of a new crane. So we look at that kind of thing as well. Extension of accommodation leases, that we see quite a lot, because you can understand that they don't want to necessarily evacuate a building just to move to another building, so they keep on extending the leases. We are busy with a framework for these leases to look at a different way of how to deal with leases. Then I also have the reason of continuing with using existing software, like I mentioned earlier. And then especially on our FOCs where they exceed the threshold limit, as I explained earlier. And then we also have something that's causing quite a lot of problems with the government-to-government procurement. If someone wants to make use of GTAC or the CSIR service, they have to go through a competitive bidding process. But sometimes they come to us and ask for specific appointment of CSIR or GTAC to render a service. And then obviously time and material expansions of scope or value or time. Those are the main reasons that we find. But then we try to analyze to also see what are the root causes of these kind of deviations and expansion applications that we are receiving. And it basically boils down to poor planning and poor contract management, inadequate market research and analysis, drafting of poor specifications and evaluation criteria. And that is where a lot of tender processes fail, if they don't do enough research to write a proper specification, then they have to evaluate that kind of problem. If they can't evaluate or it fails or nobody can achieve the specification or the evaluation criteria thresholds. One area that government is very weak on as well is contract management. They put the contracts in place and then they don't manage the contract afterwards, and then you lose the value of any savings that we are given. In a lot of cases, it also boils down to resistance to change or a lack of understanding of the procurement legislation, that they almost use deviation as the normal type of procurement and not following proper procurement processes. Emergency provisions, they make use of the emergency provisions to enter into long-term agreements, which is not really the ideal, or they use it as the easy way out, making deviation as a normal way of procurement. And then we also found, especially in the last year, that the auditor general's approach to audits are not outcome-based, but more checkbox type of approach that makes our supply chain people very reluctant to make decisions, and then they want Treasury to make the decision for them. And I think that is some of the major root causes that we find when we look at these applications that we receive from the past. Chairman, that is our story, and we can maybe look at some of the applications.
Thank you, Sam. Or remember? It's a tax.
So, Honorable Tapa, Honorable Sarkin, Honorable Charles, Honorable Bembo, Honorable Panini, Honorable Command, Honorable Peter, in the order. Okay, let's go. And then can you jump to follow each other?
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Chair, maybe the first one is just for my understanding, and I apologize if you had explained it, but I missed it. In terms of the chart, where you are saying noting conditional support, not supported. I'd be interested to know what that notation refers to. If it's not supported, what do you mean? So I'm not sure if I did speak to that and I missed it. I'd really appreciate it if you can just take us through that. Maybe you can come with the questions, it's fine. Then I'll just change my notes depending on how you explain the notation or the remark in the chart. Chair, from where I'm sitting, I think the presentation is empowering, but at the same time, disempowering because they identify succinctly the common reasons for deviation, disbudgeting, as well as the possible causes. So my questions will not necessarily be specific because we have covered around what you have identified already. It's just for me to understand, one, your view in terms of internal control within departments and SOC in order to avoid such huge number of deviations. Do we have internal controls that are strong enough to prevent such? And secondly, do you have a sense of how many or how much of these deviations, in particular, expansion is a different story, I understand, but on deviations that could have been avoided? Thirdly, are you able to identify which ones are as a result of fiscal dumping? But if in most cases it happens that you realize that you are running behind as far as your spending and then you just create programs that you'll be able to spend your funds on. So I'm just interested in understanding that. Because it's also surprising that you are saying that there is a lack of understanding in terms of soil and single supply. So most probably we need to pull in the Department of Services and Administration to be able to guide us in terms of the capacity that we have in government departments in terms of supply chain management processes. The last one, Chair, is on the issue of government-to-government procurement. Do we have this problem because of a gap in legislation, or we don't have legislation that enables government to procure directly because following cumbersome supply chain processes? Because I know when I was still in municipal level, you will have regulations like 32.6, where if a service provider provides service to another organ of state, you can request to piggyback on the same contract at the same scope without having to go into the open market. So why is it a problem at a national level? Don't you have legislation? If it's there, if it's weak, maybe so that that legislation is something that we can look at in order to strengthen your work and also help you address it becoming a problem, which results in litigation. I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to hone in on the single supplier, sole supplier situation and ask, do you audit contract specifications? Because often when you design a contract, you can create a contract for a single supplier, and that's actually a large chunk of single supplier situations, but particularly in IT. If you're going to make a specification that says the color of the cable must be pink, and there's only one supplier in the country who provides pink cables, you're going to create a single supplier situation. And so I want to know, particularly on IT contracts, what is the capacity to actually audit the technical specifications? Because it's one thing to say, okay, yes, we do audit, but if you don't know what you're looking at, you don't then know what specific specifications are being put in arbitrarily to create a single supplier situation, or give a, or even in, not in a single supplier situation, but in the bid process, to give one firm an advantage in the market over others. Because I've seen many contract documents that create artificially single supply situations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think one is, for example, look at, you would have people in government that would make senior appointments. For example, say the municipal level, they would appoint that person. Or the court would even go to the council knowing that it is not the correct procedure. The person doesn't qualify as a necessary competency or qualification. Yesterday we heard in a committee meeting share that there are municipalities that put up their budget to council knowing they don't have enough and the treasury intervenes. So my question to procurement is, in your experience, I would like to know, and you explain all the rules and the guidelines is here. I mean, to me there is enough information, except here and there where there could be misunderstanding, that in supply chain management in particular, in your opinion, I would like to know, there's obviously training, first of all a person is competent, should be competent when it's appointed into that environment, and secondly then there's further training that takes place to bring the person up to the speed and level. So from the whole supply chain management in general and where the country is now and all the things that happened over the last few years, I am so concerned that we have all the systems in place and yet we go off track. You know, the examples of what happened out there is not in line with enough information that you state that is there to guide us, except we could have minimum deviations. That for me is a concern. I'm not sure the general point I'm raising, that what must supply chain management do to bring us back on track, you know, to save money and to make value for money, the point I'm making is value for money. And then the last point, Chair, I'm just a bit concerned about the one point that you raised about the AGIS approach is not outcome-based. For me, it's a serious statement, and the high regard I have for the AG that is, in a sense, not just reporting, but almost exposing these things that I just said now before. I'm concerned about your statement. In fact, if there are examples of that they just doing a tick-off, because when we meet with them, they give us examples of how they can count the houses. They can count the outcome base, they go to the area physically and see if that contract that was signed into is, they make the tick box there after their personal visit. So this one clear to that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Alright. Okay, thank you, Chair. Mine, Chair, that I just wanted to find out from the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. The approach, because it's quite a lot of deviation. It's actually scary when it's so much, and that will mean, and it points out to some of your root causes, maybe perhaps that you have already identified. One that is standing out when I was going through this long list here quickly, there was one of public works for electronic security installation at parliamentary complexes in Cape Town. I'm like, but those things doesn't even work in our houses. So how is your oversight to when they are requesting this deviation? Do you actively do oversight? Because one would also like your office to have an oversight component to go and actually check at this projects if a person is asking a deviation. Do you have a unit like that go out and effectively do oversight over these deviations that these departments are just requesting? That is all from HR. Thanks. Oh, sorry, and the reason is continuity of services. So if you can just, what is that mean of continuity of services? Yeah, you can't even phone the police gate when you have an emergency in your house. It's on one of these pages, this one. Chair, it's on the, it's not numbered, so it's on the 1, 2, 3, the third page.
The page of?
I think go to the date, it's the 21st of the 10th, 2019. The supplier is Nectech Industrial Technologies.
Are you looking at the expansion or the deviation?
Whatever.
Expansion.
Expansion.
Yeah.
Where do you see the expansion? I'm looking at deviations.
Okay, you got it. Thank you.
So in future we must number our pages. Honorable Zembo.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the court. It's only three questions. One likely to be the same with what the trust is, but put the other one. But let me start with the general question. Do you have a profile of this department and the office? Do you make this question of division and expansion? They are known. Because the EHL, we are only getting now something that they want to have. If the authorities would be on this, then the second one would be like that. Another thing, something that put it the other way. On page 20, that bullet on page 3 by agent. And you see that something which is missing in the map from the part of the center, which is in court. Now, the question there would be,
Do you have a way of assessing certain value for money, impact assessment, and on?
Seventh day, it may be the same question. That's one of the things I ask, but now I am getting different. Then the last one, Chair, would be almost generic on the root cause.
What is the trigger
doing dealing with the root cause?
Hmm.
The same question that I asked you, second Chair. When these departments are sit in their are you ever part of that wherein you would be raising?
Thank you very much, Justice, and let me also welcome the presentation. And also this well said gentleman to Honorable Tambourine, particularly to the public group and Mr. Rodriguez. But first question, I would maybe ask if we can be as a committee be finished with the evidence to the matter that was raised about the AD. So when we engage further with the AD, we can maybe make reference and see to that. If I reach a person on the service delivery agency, I don't know, like the honourable members have as well ended to say, when we address this matter, do we as well look for value for money in terms of the contractors that we appoint, because that is very key. And in line with this single supplier, and the concern there, Chairperson, would be that, and this is very evident. Can't maybe you review or maybe attend to the matter of how the specifications are being dealt with? Because the specifications are the sole characteristics that would end up us having the sole or single service provider. Because one would claim the specifications for his or her own benefit. But I think that then there, you as well as the Office of the Procurement, you need to get involved there and check the specifications before they go out. And that would also affect to the non-submission and the extension of tender bid and everything. Because people would, and we are living in a country where we say we want to support the small and the emerging entrepreneurs. By virtue of us tightening the specifications, we are also putting them on a disadvantage side. And equally, Chairperson, I would want to ask, why can't government buy straight and move away from, there are other sectors where we don't need to go on tender. Where we really need to go and buy straight. Because this tender process has got its own way. And by us going to buy straight, we would save tons and tons of millions. But we continue by pushing things on tender. One, that would be time consuming. Two, that has got an element of corruption in itself. But I'm just asking that for me for clarity. And thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies for late arrival. You'll be surprised what is the reason. I arrived in Parliament and I realized getting here that I forgot my specs at home. So I had to go back. I didn't know that. I didn't know that we have got same conditions. Thank you very much to the office of the Chief Procurement Officer for the presentation. But Chairperson, I think I will devote my time to the root causes. In the presentation, I have not heard what the office, maybe because of arriving late, the office of the Chief Procurement Officer is doing to minimize the common reasons for these deviations and expansions, as well as the root causes in particular. And there is one root cause also that sometimes we tend to overlook, which has got a bearing on the number of public servants who are doing business with government. And it is the supplier himself or herself, that company, drafting the specifications. We have come across such instances in a lot of times. But also, what is this office doing to deal with these particular issues and to make sure that you can really minimize and reduce these root causes? Equally so, I think there was, I think it's Honorable Joseph who speaks about the Auditor General's approach to audit. And I would want to know, what is the relationship between the Office of the Auditor General and the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer? Primarily because in my previous life there was an investigation that was done, and the Auditor General then recommended that the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, who was identified by the Public Protector as part of their remedial actions, to have the responsibility to investigate some of the contracts, we agreed that that particular process needs to unfold. So one would be surprised to see this long list of root causes when the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer was actually muted as almost, for a lack of a better word, a panacea for dealing with this, some of these particular challenges. The other thing that I want to find out is the departments and entities with repeat requests of the same nature, which would then create a red flag. Because it is important that you can then inform this committee that there's this particular company that has been identified repeatedly. And I would understand, you know, there is an indication. There are some times when certain deviations would be as a result of unforeseen, unplanned circumstances. But for that particular unforeseen in the first year to become unforeseen again in the second year, to become unforeseen again in the third year, for me, it does not augur well. Especially for companies that are doing investigations in matters of the state. Because you would then say there was a red flag from the Auditor General's report, and therefore we needed to make sure that there is particular forensic investigations that happen. And then I'm sure you get my drift. But also, does this office engage with the executing authority with regards to these deviations? Because you are picking up as this office departments and entities that report to departments. The Auditor General does have a platform to engage with the executing authorities with regards to the audit outcomes. Is this office able, maybe through National Treasury or whatever, but as the Chief Procurement Officer himself or herself, be able to sit with the executing authority and say, look, these are some of the signs that I'm seeing. The other thing, how many of the companies that were red flagged? Remember, there were companies that were actually banned from doing business with government because of some unsavory behaviors, and how many of them do you pick up in this process? Because there would be companies that are said have been barred from doing business with government, but they are still doing business with government in other spheres or in other entities And what is the system that we have in place to be able to track this? The other thing is, are you able or do you have a means to detect where these deviations as well as expansions have a bearing on certain public servants who are doing business with government? Does the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer have a way of engaging with the Public Service Commission with regard to the declarations of interest and all those type of things? Are you able to also inform the Public Service Commission on public servants that you are picking up in the companies that are at all times doing deviations and this? But also, is the Office of the Chief Procurement, and I think it's Honorable Komani who raised this issue about buying direct, are you able to help reduce red tape in terms of procurement? You know, Chairperson, we at all times are informed of the spending trends, and departments will tell you that it is the procurement process that delays all this. And what is it that you are doing? At one time, during the time when this office was being set up, there was an indication, and I remember there was a clear example made about hospitals having to buy a toilet paper, or offices of government having to buy toilet paper through big tenders, which are really unnecessary, which actually was working against the very, I'm sure you would have been aware that in earlier years, the Department of Social Development had those women-driven projects for poverty alleviation for women with children who were on grants for them to do some of these small businesses. But they were also now barred from doing business with government because of the onerous procurement processes that they had to go through. And also, is this office able to help us with the area that has been identified with regard to delayed payments? Because some of these delayed payments, we are informed, are also part of these processes that public servants are involved in, to say, if you don't do this, then they delay the payment and it becomes an on and on and on and on. The other thing, the issue of red tape. You know, with regard to leases and office accommodation, yes, it is important that you look at the contracts in no, and they are especially with public works, repeat request for expansion, because you can't have an office for 5 years and at the end again have new offices. It has a bearing also on morale of the staff and also productivity. Are you not able as this office to look at some kind of recommendation? What guidelines and regulations need to be changed to allow for a better way in terms of procuring going into office lease accommodation? And what is this support that you give to departments to be able to make sure that these root causes can actually, one day we come here and you still just have one, maybe, or two. But this long list is worrying, because if you say yourself, poor planning, what type of people do we have in the public service? Inadequate market research and analysis. And that is always the story. It has a bearing on the fact that certain service providers are not available and they have to be sourced from external and all those type of things. You'd remember there was a stage where we even had to have plumbers from outside the country when Eskom was building these massive power plants. So I think also the reluctance to make their own decisions and asking Treasury. Probably Treasury is being used as a scarecrow to say, if Treasury has approved, then it means that everything will be hunky-dory. But how do you allow that your colleagues, in essence, don't make decisions, but rather wait for you to make decisions? And I think it is important that that we deal with it. But my main worry is those companies that are still doing a business with government, public servants who are doing business with government, and also our lack of capacity in the state to just spend and procure services that we are expected to procure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
I'm going to drink my tea now.
Thank you, Chair. It seems that if I'm having very few questions to raise, but my main problem, I see the presentation here, it's very brief. But at the end, I feel that it doesn't tell us, for instance, if you go to your root cause and other problems, what is your actual intention to remedy this situation that you are in? Because it can't just be root causes, as you mentioned them. But at least there should be a way to say, now that we have identified these root causes and other problems, what is your intention as a procurement office to remedy the situation? We understand we're also here to help you to go through this situation, but now that you have you are in charge of this situation, what remedial cause are you putting in front of us so that we can see how we beef it up rather than just stating the root causes only? In the public service or in main organizations, the issue of underperformance, a person becomes guilty as charged. I'm trying to read here that there's a lot of poor management, performance, lack of understanding. I don't know what did it make out of your mind, what is it actually that is happening there? Are there mechanisms and systems to counter these things not to happen and that they are put here? Because it's a problem. It's like we don't have proper institutions and people to manage those institutions to carry forward the duties as instructed from the Office of the Chief Procurement Office. The second question is, in the light of promotion of probably South Africa, what observation can you bring forth to us to say indeed a lot of institutions have actually how can you measure that they are taking forward that campaign because probably South African campaign because we are procuring. So I think this office is at the center of that campaign, probably South Africa. So what is your observation? And the last one is, I didn't even come across the word corruption here. Because, maybe one happens to be in the government department. Corruption is often a way that you often find in something called supply chain and procurement. I don't know what is your view as an office with regard to that. What have you read with regard to that? Because it can't be a business as usual there when it comes to the issue of fighting corruption in the procurement office. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I forgot to deal with the figure. That's one of the things. On both deviation and expansion. Do you, when you have taken a decision not to support either of them, make a follow-up in terms of checking for the alternative? For instance, let's take your ESCOM conference, where they would have applied for a expansion called supply. And you look at the amount of that particular expansion and you say no, not something. now in the light of service delivery.
Do you make a follow up of saying, after we have taken a decision not to appoint, what then has actually happened? Or are you able, like as Honorable Peter said, in my other night, I was one a manager for Tom and Zoe, and I would pick up where certain things, if you refuse certain things, but that particular section of the department will go back and break down that bigger plan into smaller pieces, and it will come in chunks. And you end up supporting, not knowing now that at the end of the day it is hard, which you will support. Are you able then to pick up on that? Then check.
I just wanted to say, in terms of the support, in your presentation, there would be lack of understanding from the department. But seated here, one would want to ask, what kind of support or what is given to the department so that they can understand what is it that is expected from them? How is it that they should report? And especially when you said you'd find that they would maybe submit soul vis-a-vis singers, particularly those. So what is it that the office is doing to support them in terms of this information? Further to that, Chairperson, what is the office doing in terms of the poor management by different departments? Because if one may cite an example, you'd find that there is a contract to the department where before maybe payments are done, there needs to be inspectors to confirm whether the service or is the service that we needed, or does it qualify for the money that you are paying. But in the same event, I don't know if Honorable Kaiso I'm saying the same words as he was saying, because he alluded something to corruption. But you then find that the same officials would then give out a certificate of confirmation and payments are done. But then, during a short space of time, would then find that, particularly like in the ambient houses, the toilets and all those things, you'd find that they fall out. Yet we have got the certificate to say this confirms that the work done is in terms of the specification, the material used was in terms of the specification, and is it that the office is doing to address that. Because we have got such many incidences, but we have never come across an incident where it is said the official who was responsible for misleading the Office of the Procurement has been held to account. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry to come back without you having given us the second round. I just want to find out from this office which of your, in terms of your understanding and previous experiences, have you ever had requests for expansions as well as deviations that were declined or not supported that end up being reflected in a entity or department's reasons for over expenditure and then ends up calling for condoning and all those type of things? But also, are there investigations that this office is busy with? And have you had instances where, as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, you have referred matters to the President for whatever that authority is, for the SIU to investigate, or any other referred matters to any other law enforcement officer? or I mean agencies, because for me it would be what Comrade Kaiso raised. Have we had investigations that were initiated as a result of something that has been picked up by this office?
No, actually, the reason I started asking by the narrative on the chat was that I was hoping for a second round because I was looking at the chat of the debate. I just wanted to get clarity. Since I see my colleagues are coming in for the second bite, then maybe I can meet now as well. Is there a specific reason on the chat or on I'll give it number three, page number three. If I read the cover as the first page and then the printing on the second page, there is a line there that speaks of the supply of 206 tons of copper by Glencore and others. If you look at that, there is no amount listed. I think it's line number 13, Daniel. Yeah, so you can see there are no amounts there, and you are saying not supported. So that's what I was asking about, not supported and the others. Mm. The last column says finalized. Mm. So does it mean that it is not supported, and it was not done, and it will not be done, so you are finalizing it? Why I'm raising on that is that there are certain line items with amounts, with the same comment, not supported, with the same conclusion finalized, but then the amounts are added to the total of the particular entity. So it, for me, it's contradicting to say there is not supported, not finalized, there are no amounts. Here they are added. What does it mean? Thank you. And then maybe just of interest, Chair, I see we're spending 260 million to accommodate the SIA crew in hotels on the first page at the bottom. Do we know for how long, what does this 260 million mean? Top 15 hotels. Comrade Coleman, you spoke about the interest, particularly from some of our parties who will be interested in empowering young and emerging entrepreneurs. So here we are specifically looking at top 15 hotels. So clearly there we are not even considering an emerging hotelier. And then for me, I think it goes against what we are seeking to achieve in our objective of economic upliftment of those that want to penetrate the services industry. So I'm not too sure if whether we really looked at that in detail to see whether are we really achieving the objectives of what we are seeking to do. Thank you very much, Chair.
For now, that is a second round. I just want to go straight to that long green paper. And under passenger, not passenger rate, just after passenger rate.
Lepelle.
Yeah, Lepelle. Lepelle.
Lepelle.
There is something that is noted there under not supported and supported. But here appears noting. So I don't understand what is noting, whereas there was supposed to be indication whether it's something that is supported or conditionally supported or not supported. But there, under Lepelle.
Lepelle.
Oh, Lepelle. Yes, I just want to understand what it
could be the Lepelle.
What are those?
Yes.
Chair, if I'm the only one who represent the province or the nation,
So I just want to say something before you respond.
What is conditional?
Normally, when they go training or all the we confirm training, the roommate awareness, or that they have awareness program in order to assist this one to assist them. Or they also put in their program of monitoring. I heard the members talked about that, but what is it that we're doing? But I just want to also make an addition. If you are going to respond, just tell us the qualities that you're doing in order to assist all the departments. Because what we have realized is that every time one teacher comes to the committee and do the presentation, there is always understanding, overspending. So then I then ask my question, I was asking myself a question, why do these people then end up not using the money that was allocated for them to use it? And at the end of the day, they come back to you and request for a support, and the others are being supported, the others are not being supported. It's like animals are not equal in front of your eyes. There are other better animals, and there are those who just, whether they live or they don't live, there's no problem. And I'm sure if monitoring or awareness can be conducted in all these departments, I'm sure it will end up assisting the people. And also, if ever sometimes the mistakes are being committed, like, I don't know how I can put it in English. I'm sure when I what is it that you do in order to assist? Thank you.
I'm very sorry, Chairperson. Just a last point. The capacity of this office for the mandate at hand. Because if you look at this, Chairperson, there's a lot of work that needs to go into this. There are some that is noted, like honorables are raising. There are some that has got conditional support and all those. Is there follow-up service that the office is providing? But do you have the capacity to deal with matters related to supply chain challenges in this country? Because the root cause of our problems, our nightmares, comes from supply chain issues, which you've got direct oversight over. Thank you, Chairperson. That was the last.
Okay. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you, honorable members. I didn't even give you time. You know, I always give you time. because they were very good with their presentation, so I could see that you can have as many questions as you like. But one assumption that going forward shouldn't be is the assumption that there's always the second round.
And a third one.
I see, but another would be something doing that. I think we should change our approach to dealing with the office. You see, you come in and report about the issue. The various policies are far more than the question of organization. They're an office of the chief procurement of the regional office.
Mm-hmm.
So let us not call you the office of chief deviation.
Mm-hmm.
Because so we must talk about procurement. And as you hear the question coming from the honorable member, it's about procurement. And before I come to my notes, just to underline what perhaps honorable Peter was saying, I think 90% of, if not more, of the problems that we have, they revolve around procurement.
and supply chain issues. So we can't glide over this thing. So we need to invite the office of the Chief Procurement Office in the future, and we talk about procurement and procurement related issues. For instance, the first question that one would like to today in your presentation, what do you see your role to be?
Mm.
What is the role of this office? So I think let's just agree. We need to invite the office or members, and we talk about these issues are so many and varied and very problematic. So we don't want you to come and only report about this issue. It's just one part of what you do. We want you to come and talk about your performance, so that you can even see that you understand what your role is. Then you can engage. So we'll do that. A few things which I think one needs to stress. I'm assuming you do have blacklisted companies. So we need a slide on blacklisted companies and the reasons thereof and the process of getting to that. It's a pity Honorable Sheikh is not here. We also know that government is overcharged left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. Honorable Sheikh said yesterday, we think that we should also find a way of once persons who are buying water, we should be able to tell the public how much we pay for this water. And then, so that we can see how we're getting ready for money. And it should be out there. We assess that. I'm just running over this thing. And again, we're also asking the list of repeat offenders as far as these conditions are concerned. Have that. SOCs in particular, but I think government too, should have policy on conflict of interest. But having said that, why don't we have a uniform policy of conflict of interest, so that we don't find that Eskom has got its own policy on conflict of interest, Transnet has got its own, other people come, they change the policy of conflict of interest to try and sweep them, so on and so forth. So one of the things that when we come back, I think for me, again talking about capacity, it will be very important that you also take us through the policy of conflict of interest. Declarations, what type of declaration that you make. But remember this, again, I don't know how does one emphasize or re-emphasize this. The problem that government has is around this area. So the presentation doesn't even start to deal with the problems that we are facing. In fact, it's so conspicuous by its absence amongst the root causes of deviation. Because one of the primary reasons why people want to deviate is corruption.
Mm.
They may come with all a number of other things and so on, but it boils down to corruption. And I think it should be there. You can't talk about root causes and not have that. It's amongst the primary reasons why people will have this thing of deviation. I don't say it's the only one. But it should be there, and it's critical because I know that happened. And then in the office of the OCPO, can you please tell us about the process of you guys arriving, whether you do or you don't get deviations? In 1 year, you know which year it is. There was a total of about 40 billion rand deviations. And about 32 billion rand came from one company. You know it. And it's not a surprise for me that company which was asking for those many deviations is one of the companies that we deal with here day in and day out. And it was Eskom. There was a year where Eskom applied for 32 billion rand deviation. And they got those deviations of 32 billion rand. And
yes.
I would like to know the process that you guys at the OCPO go through, right, when you provide perhaps, if Martin talks to the quantum, as whether if it's like this, perhaps
nothing efficient on you anyway, but I'm saying there is nothing which says you can't be involved in corruption affairs. Right? Yeah. And it's not about you. I'm just saying the fact that if tomorrow I'm there, there's nothing which says I can't be colluding with people to keep these divisions there, right and center. So that's why I'm interested in knowing what process you go through in allowing or disallowing the process of deviation. You spoke about some of the reasons about poor planning, right? And you also add poor project management, poor contract management. So the question is, what are we doing about that? I think this committee has been seized with this matter of a big company like Eskom, right? Where you find that a project of 70 billion rand ends up being 140 billion rand. And if you look at that, there is no way you're going to say no, because they've got the company which has started it somewhere, and it came at 70 billion rand. If you don't allow them to continue and to think, it means the project is going to end there. But if the proper project management and contract management, there would be penalties for people to do that. I've never heard Arsene penalizing the company. If you do business with private companies, I've seen it so many times where the contractor ends up paying the client because certain things didn't happen at a particular time. For instance, if you put in your tender and you say you'll be finishing this thing in 6 months and it doesn't get finished in 6 months, the implications for me was expecting to start using the thing in 6 months, right? So there should be some penalties on those things. But I tell you that when it comes to contract management and contract writing, when it comes to us, because these things are at the tail end, the main thing is at the beginning, what do you do to make sure that we are protected as it is when it comes to these things? And you don't find yourself in the corner that you must approve. Otherwise, what happens if you don't approve the contractors at school after you've paid them 70 billion rand, the one division? I'm sure you get my drift. So, poor in project management, poor contract drafting and contract management. These are the things that I think you should assist with. And then there is a deviation on government to government procurement. I would like to hear what your concern would be. Because for me, I am basing a blind spot here. If government is, that's what we'd like to promote, government to government, for if we can get the service from government, I think the money is circulating within government, where possible. But what's your concern? I would like just to hear first, what are the risks that are there. And again, do we have a limit perhaps in our contracts as to how long can contracts go? Contracts which are over 20 years or 40 years and so on, how do we come to that? Others are only 2 years. Please educate us when it comes to that. When it comes to the extension of the period of certain contracts, do we have time limits as well? We can extend by 1 year, not more than that. Do we have 2 years? Or it can be wire extension and always come in. It just was going to be extended. And perhaps if you could share with this committee, what are the recent deviations? Where is the public procurement bill? What's happening? It has been there forever. Why is it not going? That's one. But two, say, it's one thing to say, where is it? Would like in your next presentation to go and brief this committee about the bill. What are the objectives of the bill? What are we trying to achieve about that bill? And so on and so forth. We need to have that. Honourable members, I think we deal with the budget here. If there's one area that I think we need to spend time on, it is OCPO and what they are doing and not doing, and so on and so forth. So can we have that presentation? We'll give you time and we'll make that presentation about the bill and what you are trying to do and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Just to throw in on that, the budget. One of the things that we have said as Parliament is that we wanted to use the budget as an instrument of transformation. So we'd also like to see what you've done about that and how do you achieve that objective. This thing of a single source supply, one of the lessons that I learned on Ecos 101 is that you can't have perfect knowledge of the market. You can't know a priori that there's only one supplier and so on. And so I think that is used to close out other people. I'm worried about that, right? Because yesterday there might have been a sole supplier, but today a new supplier enters the market. So how do you define whether there's a sole or single supplier? I would like you to talk into that. I think that would be my last input and question. But as you can see, some of the things I'm saying, it's bad costing. And so you can go and work and work on those things. We do want a list of what you're having, because then who are the repeat offenders here?
Mm.
If you can just tell us, for instance, those who are here, for instance, who are in your top 10, who were there last year? Who were there the other year? And what have we done about today? Because it might have become the norm that certain companies they operate by deviation.
Mm-hmm.
So it means they are not adhering to any of the laws, they're not adhering to any of the procurement policies, SCM policies in the company. I think while you are busy digesting your answers and making sure that you are going to answer the honorable members who didn't just end up with the first round, continue on the second round, why don't we take a 15 minutes break, let's have tea, and you're also invited to have tea with us as you are really trying to work out the answer. Okay, there's something from
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the question that you spoke about, that the approval process of the deviation and expansion from the chief program is for you. The fifth parliament made a resolution on this matter. And the Director General of Treasury was instructed to establish a committee that will look into this deviation. The problem at the time was that it appeared as if the only person who approved the deviation and expansion for the whole of government was one chief director.
Mm-hmm.
At that time it was still solely. She's now with this call. And then there was a big problem through SCOBA. And the Director General was given an instruction and then was directed to come back and report to Parliament. So I so hope when they report about the approval processes to say who's involved, they can take the committee into confidence to say how far are they in that process of establishing that committee. Because the issue of corruption, as you are saying, corruption is not right, everyone can be corrupt. The problem was that it was only one person who was responsible for the whole of government. And then how do we insulate that person from the temptations of corruption? I hope they can update you with what did the Director General, as per the directive of Parliament, did in that process.
Getting more interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. No, just now that I went through this, sorry to speak after you. It's not politically correct. Chair, on page this page of the is the report of deviations, right? There's one of the police service, New World Discount Stores, for the procurement of 15 drones. And then they say the quotation process is confidential. So just if they can take it into confidence. But what is the reason that the quotation process is confidential? Thank you.
Okay. You get that? Thank you so much. Let's adjourn for about 15 minutes and then we'll come back.
Yeah.
Are we ready? Natasha, it's very hot here. Oh no, it's hot. Can you get our aircon going? I'll allow National Treasury to respond. Remember that I've just had a little bit of a meeting with National Treasury, and what I was impressing to them is that where they don't have answers, let them not try to squeeze answers which are going to be convenient. They should say so that we don't have answers for this. We'll come back on them. Because we want to be at a better space after having listened to them. And we'll definitely prioritize their coming back. Okay, and I think you are coming back. We'll definitely, and let's agree on this. We'd like the DG to be here when we engage with them the next round. Okay? Thank you. Thank you then, it's your turn.
Thank you so much, Chair. Chair, I think I will start with the sort of high level or the empowering type questions where I explain the legends on the presentation and what we mean by specific words, and then I'll go into explaining how we crafted the list, the Excel sheets and what we mean, so to bring some clarity on that. So if we look at slide number 6 on the deviation, where we've broken down the numbers into percentages in the different colors on the pie chart, we have four different kind of responses when we respond to deviations. We can either support meaning that we approve the deviation, we agree that the institution must go ahead with the deviation as they have requested it. Then we have conditional support. Conditional support is when we agree with the institutions to go ahead with the deviation, but with specific conditions that they need to comply with before they can actually deviate and do what they requested. Then we have not supported. So not supported is where we have completely declined and do not agree that the deviation must go ahead. Noting is when the deviation is done, has been done by the institutions, and they're just reporting to us. So basically letting us know that they have deviated for the specific reasons. The noting ones are the ones that, according to the Treasury, to the instruction note 3 of 2016-17, allows the accounting officer to deviate in cases of emergency and when it's a sole supplier. But when the deviation is above $1 million, the requirement is that then they must report that deviation to the National Treasury. What we have seen in those instances is that when they deviate, we still do look at the reasons why they deviated, and we respond back to the department or to the accounting officers to say we agree with the deviation or we do not agree with the deviation, as we do not believe that it meets the description of either emergency or sole supplier, and we would therefore declare it irregular. Then when you look at the spreadsheets themselves, the column that talks to the conditional support or the noting or within accounting authority to accounting officer mandate, it's the type of response that we would have given, whether we support or we don't support or we decline. The finalized column at the bottom is just our own tracking to say we have finalized this matter, we have closed it. And closing it meaning we have made a decision whether we are supporting or not supporting, or supporting with conditions, or we are noting, or whatever the case that may be. Then certain deviations, the ones that you see that do not have amounts, are the ones that do not necessarily have an amount attached to the deviation in itself. So for example, if a department requests that to deviate and advertise a tender for a shorter period of time, instead of the 21 days, normally then that deviation does not have a value attached to it. So those are the ones that you would typically see either with a dash or a zero, or it would say not stated on them. And then I will come back to the specific ones on SAP and Dinel as I'm going through the questions to you, Chair. So, Chair, I think it's also worth mentioning and noting that what has happened with the deviations is that the numbers and the increased numbers that we see now in the reports does not necessarily mean that they have not been there all along. The reason why we are seeing them now and they seem to be spiked up now is because in 2016, the Treasury Regulation, let me start there, first of all, Treasury Regulation 16A64, allows for the accounting officer or the accounting authority to deviate from normal procurement processes when they see it impractical or deem it in exceptional cases, let me use the word it uses. But because we then realized later on that there has been a significant abuse on the system and the using of the deviation for corruption and all sorts of other things, we then decided to put a mechanism to sort of curb the deviations, and that's when we introduced the instruction note 3 of 2016-17, where we said accounting officers and accounting authorities, you can now only be able to approve deviations that are within, which are emergency or sole supply. Anything else, then you must bring to the National Treasury. That's when then the applications then started going to the National Treasury, meaning that previously they could have been there, but not necessarily being reported because they were not necessarily coming to the Treasury.
As you explained that, what is the legal standing or status of the note that you are talking about?
Thank you. It is an instruction note, so it is a mandatory instruction, and therefore departments must comply with it. So it's part of the regulations of SCM.
So we started seeing the deviations then spike up and come to the National Treasury in that fashion. The question of internal controls. I think we have seen through the AG report as well as the amount of non-compliance we have seen in the SEM prescripts, that the internal controls within the department are not as adequate as we would want them to be. So you would have seen over the years that the irregular expenditures have also spiked up to what seems to be a uncontrollable fashion. But that talks to a number of things besides the fact of internal controls. What we have also seen as a trend is the fact that it seems like there's low maturity levels within our SEM units. And that includes processes, that includes systems, that includes people, that includes governance. Governance, we mean the level of consequence management, the level of policies and their adequacy and their effectiveness and things like that in the SEM units. What we have seen is that in government we tend to take supply chain management as not part of a strategy of the department. We treat it like a unit or a function that is there by the corner that is supposed to just procure for the department, while we believe that it should be seen as part of a strategy and a strategic drive to address objectives of the department and government and the country at large. Have we seen fiscal dumping, deviations used for fiscal dumping? Yes, we have seen it. We think that it is a trend that we've also picked up over a number of years, that sometimes institutions write to us requests for deviations, but it's not only purely because we would call it fiscal dumping. It links directly to the issue of poor planning, where we see departments sit and not implement their tender processes, or when they realize that their APP targets are they're reaching the end of the year and they have not moved on matters because they've not moved on tender processes, then they start deviating instead of concluding their tender processes. We engage with the departments on those type of matters. One of the things that we do is that we monitor procurement plans on a quarterly basis. So we request departments to submit procurement plans at the beginning of the year, and then on a quarterly basis we test their compliance. We request reasons for why they have not complied to their procurement plans. And in our view, in actual fact, if you look at issues of deviations, because of the nature that deviations should be, so exceptional cases or impractical cases where it's impractical for you to go out on tender, it's almost evident to us that when the department decides on a procurement strategy or a procurement approach, or if they have done adequate market analysis and research, they should be able to determine at that point in time if it will be practical for them to go out on tender or not. And for us, a deviation should then come at that time rather than later when you're supposed to be implementing. But the ones that we see, on the list that you have, those are operational efficiency and effectiveness related type problems. In a sense that you will see, because we want service delivery, but service delivery is not new. You knew all along that you need to deliver services and you had a plan in delivering services. Why didn't you deliver the services in the manner that you had planned at the time that you had planned? And those are the type of challenges and questions that we find ourselves caught up in between. Hence, we said sometimes the institution leaves it to the National Treasury to make a decision. Because when they realize that they have run out of time and there's not enough time for them to go out on a tender process, they then come for a deviation. But the truth of the matter of fact is that if you have run out of time to implement a specific program, that is not impractical for you to go out on tender. So you're not using the deviation process for what it was meant to be, but as a risk mitigation for solution for poor performance. The government-to-government procurement,
Is it a gap in legislation, or we don't have legislation, and why we do not use piggybacking? The government-to-government procurement, the biggest problem there is that we have seen that government institutions, first of all, there's a spike in what we call implementing agents between government institutions. The biggest problem with implementing agents is that departments use implementing agents that is not even within their mandates to be doing what they request them to be doing. That's the first problem. The second problem becomes, if it's within the mandate of that institution to be doing what the other institution is requesting, the departments do not have unlimited capacity. Their capacity is still limited, therefore, in most cases, they cannot meet the demand of other government institutions. So what happens is that they then go and appoint service providers, so subcontract what they have to do to service providers, creating a big market chunk for those service providers that they would have appointed because of the demand of government. What that does is that it increases the prices that the other government institutions have to pay, so it becomes, so quickly the government department that is providing the service almost become like a middleman between the procuring department and the service providers, and thirdly, tend to create monopolies. I'll use a typical example that I like using is the government printing works, where they already have a panel established where they, when they get the demand from the department, they push it through to the panel that they have appointed, and the prices are just, yes, and they're exorbitant.
They don't print themselves.
There are portions that they print themselves, which are legislated, they can't give to everybody else. But if we give them everything else, then they push it over to the subcontractors.
Chair, and similarly, we would find that with the CSIR and the DBSA as implementing agents, because they do have a mandate, a certain mandate, but if they don't have the internal capacity to service the government department that's requesting it, then they essentially have to go out on an own, on their own tender process or use a panel, which is, as Bisani had said, just another middleman. So we, when we want to look at government-to-government procurement, we want to see that when we do procure from the government department, is that they use their own internal resources to fulfill the mandate.
Why we do not use piggybacking? Because piggybacking also involves service providers at the end. So it means that the institution that is requesting to piggyback would need to piggyback on a contract that's already existing in the other department. Again, it's an uncompetitive way of procuring, and it promotes monopolies. It also increases the price because it's no longer competition. Sole and single source, do we audit the specifications? We do audit specifications. However, we audit specifications that would have been submitted to the National Treasury, or where the request would have come to the National Treasury for review, or the ones that we would have identified through the monitoring of the procurement plan as either high risk, or we have seen that it has been in previous procurement plans, and it just keeps on moving to the next year, or the ones where we see that we have received too many requests for cancellation, we would then review. I must say and put a disclaimer, Chair, that the question did come back later, but I think it's worth answering now, that our capacity is also not unlimited. If anything, it is very limited. The team that deals with this currently is sitting at a head count of about 15 people that have to deal with all spheres of government insofar as procurement is related, so from a governance monitoring and compliance perspective. So that means that the amount of reviews that we can do is limited. Further to that, the other monitoring and support mechanisms that we provide to the departments is we do site visits, so we visit the departments, we visit specific projects. We also do workshops, but again, we have to be targeted and very targeted in how we do that because of the limited capacity that we have. So most of the institutions where we have gone to do workshops or some form of a training, and I don't want to call it training because we don't issue a certificate, but we look at the bid reviews that we would have done for those specific institutions, then we go and do the training because the training then becomes very directed. We know exactly what your problems are because we've seen them, we've got the evidence, then we come and train you on those matters.
Sorry, do one thing which I think you must also touch on, the use of what, Section 32? In Section 32, yeah.
The piggybacking?
Yeah.
In the MFMA space?
Yeah. Does it only happen at the municipality level? It doesn't happen at provincial and national?
It does. It's just that in the municipal space, it's called the Section 32 regulation of the MFMA. In the PFMA, it's Treasury Regulation 16A64 of the Treasury Regulation. With the municipalities, it is a little bit more controlled because there are circulars that guide the implementation of Section 32. In the MFMA space, it's not the case. The PFMA space, it's only the Treasury Regulation that says a department or an institution can, it doesn't say piggyback, it says can
participate
on a contract established by another organ of state as long as they have gone through the procurement processes. But we have seen a whole lot of abuse in that in itself. Why? Because you'd find that institutions would want to piggyback on a contract that has been established for 2 years or for a year and award for 5 years. We have seen institutions that would take the very same contracts that have been appointed for 2 million and they appoint the very same service provider now for 140 million and things like that. So it is a problem in its own. And we are working on frameworks to guide and curb the abuse of those regulations, similar to the instruction that we had issued to curb the abuse of Treasury Regulation 16A66. Are there scenarios where officials go to council without following proper processes? Yes. I think the fact that we see a lot of irregular expenditure, there's quite a significant amount that demonstrates that departments mislead sometimes their own governance structures, council, accounting authorities, but similarly, they mislead us to the same way they mislead. So that is why you would see that in processing deviations, and I'm sure you would have heard, we tend to take a very long time. Why? Because we have to dig in because departments don't offer information. If you don't ask for it, they won't give it to you, one. But secondly, we've seen that some of the things that they do request for really do not exist. So we have to sometimes go there and do a site visit and see what they are talking about. But because of the fact that we also have limited capacity, we cannot visit everyone and every deviation request that we receive at the moment. And then the issue around the tick box approach to audits. The biggest issue there is the fact that the irregular expenditure framework defines irregular expenditure as non-compliance to any piece of legislation. So what that means is that whether the non-compliance has got significant or material impact on the department or the financials themselves or the procurement in itself or it doesn't matter. It is declared as irregular expenditure. So what then tends to happen is that you even sometimes where you find that the non-compliance is out of management's honest decision not to comply still remains irregular expenditure because it's non-compliance. And I'll give you an example where one of the institutions, I'm going to try to remember what it is, I think it was ESCOM, had a tender that went through a fully appropriate supply chain processes, except the fact that at the time when they advertised the tender, the CIDB website was down. And the requirement of the CIDB Act is that all construction-related tenders must be advertised on the CIDB website. And they waited for a period of time, and it was still down, and they got confirmation from the CIDB that their website is done. And then they decided to advertise on the e-tender portal, the newspapers, and all the other mechanisms that they can. But it was still declared irregular, and the entire $1.3 billion was declared irregular, simply just because it was not advertised. So it's those kind of things, and I think it's mostly because of the fact of how we define irregular expenditure. It does not define materiality. It does not define and how far it can go. However, that is why the AG then put mechanisms for material or processes of material irregularities, what we call the new powers of the AG, to deal with issues that or the irregularities that have elements of misconduct, corruption, or what we call material non-compliance in how things were done in procurement. So how do we provide oversight over the projects themselves? As I've mentioned, we identify specific project based on our risk assessment or on our monitoring of the procurement plan that we do site visits, and we engage the institution over how those projects are going. But like I said, because of the limited capacity that we have, we can only do so much of them. We cannot do, and there's a whole lot of projects that we believe that should have appropriate oversight given over them. We currently do not have a profile that gives which institutions have made it a norm to deviate or not to deviate. It's one of the things, Chair, that I will request that we forward to the next presentation, because we have the data. We just need to analyze it and do proper comparison over a period of time, and then we can present to the committee. The pit latrines, do we have a way of assessing performance and value for money? So the pit latrines, yes, we are aware, and we have been assessing performance on the pit latrines. We have seen, for example, that in some of the projects, a toilet, I'm sorry, I don't know what's the better word to use for a toilet. Would sometimes cost $1.2 million to put down one toilet. Yeah.
It's a front end.
But it's purely because of the manner, and sometimes it's because of the challenges that you've articulated on the comments that the honourable members provided when you were asking the questions. The fact that the way our procurement system currently is designed sometimes to allow for appointment of what we call middlemen. So the cost becomes so bloated because the department will appoint a implementing agent. That is a cost at a percentage of the program or the project fee. Then the implementing agent will appoint project managers at a certain percentage of the cost of the project. Then there will be the contractors. Then there will be, when you take all those costs and allocate them, and the subcontractors, and when you take all those costs and you allocate them to say, right, how much does one toilet cost us? And it would get to 1.2 over 1 million. It's a problem that needs to be addressed. But yeah. Same...
Put into the toilet and put into the airplane. The costly one.
That's on the head. Yes. I think one of the things when you come back, I think we'd be interested in saying, what are you doing about that? Since you've identified the problem, what are we doing about that? Because we can't speak about one and the same thing year in, year out, and so on, and all these leakages. There's so much leakage in the system.
Yes. Yes, Chair. Maybe before you continue. Hence you raised that question. I think we should equally request the Office of the Chief Procurement to as well engage with the department. I remember we engaged with the Department of Cooperative Governance when we requested the minister to reconsider the implementation and to review how they are implementing it so that we can keep this issue of the implementing agents, because truly they would charge, one implementing agent would charge 3.5 million only for project management fee. And that would go there further. And the same implementing agent would then contract into itself. So I think it is proper for us when we engage with other departments, particularly now that we are with you, we should as well engage with these departments to kind of say how best we can do to save this cost. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. And I think also on what you have raised, Chair, it's also like their mandate. How far can they reach? How far can they, you understand? Because they can point out all of these mistakes or deviations or, what is this English word? But anyway, corruption. Let me just say corruption. People not following the system. But, and then they can report it to maybe the accounting officer or the minister at hand. Equally so, their mandate don't have teeth, and it seems the department itself, because the lady just said there are 15 people doing these reports. So also equally we have to also maybe address that issue, is to look at the mandate of the chief procurement officer, and also in terms of the capacity in the unit. Thank you.
Yeah, I think just to latch onto that, the public procurement bill. I think that's where we should try and look at all these things. That's why we said we would like to be preferred to that bill, right? Before it even goes out, we want to see it. That's what we're trying to do, so that some of these things we say we want these things in this and. Honourable members, this committee is responsible for the budget of government, right? I think we should have a particular interest in that bill and study it and do everything and make sure. And you guys must also advise us, right, from the practical experience to say if this was covered in an act, would have been able to do 1, 2, 3. We don't want to make you police. We also don't want you to hinder progress. You understand? I remember, for instance, when there was still Honorable Peters, when there was still the state tender board, to get an office, I had to wait for about 8 months because it still had to go through the tender box. Né? So there was sort of a bottleneck, and we don't want you to be bottlenecks. But at the same time, your role should be very clear, and you should make sure that, because we want to see value for money, right? We want to see what's happening to our people and so on. See these things. You get these things where people put in 400% markup, which is obscene, and they do that when they deal with government. So I'm just saying, a question of getting a good balance, a happy medium, so to speak. Hi, ma'am.
Thanks, Chair. I wanted to almost just come into the value for money aspect in government procurement or in public procurement. We must remember that public procurement also has some social obligations that it has to address. And we did a little bit of an exercise in Gauteng where we analyzed the procurement process, and there was something like 800 pieces of things that you had to check before the procurement process can go through. You know, and it's burdensome. And just to touch on what you said, do we always have to go out on tender? And I'm from a strategic sourcing, I'm looking at it from a strategic sourcing perspective, and anything that government buys, our only procurement process is the open tender process. Or it's the 95% of it is through open tender process. And there are areas and industries where we can do closed bids or limited bids or negotiations. And we haven't explored that because government stance is open procurement processes. And it talks to the maturity levels as well, is that people don't understand the principles of strategic sourcing, where you weigh up the risks and the values versus the market complexity, whether it's a strategic commodity or a routine commodity or a leverage commodity or a bottleneck commodity. And each of those types of commodities has a different sourcing strategy. And unfortunately, in government, we go through the leverage commodity route, which is open competitive bidding. And we're not exploring the strategic relationships in the strategic commodities or managing our risks in the bottleneck commodity. But that's a little bit more operational, but I wanted to address your question to say currently we are not really exploring those avenues because I think our maturity levels are not there yet, and it still opens it up for a little bit of abuse.
So in the same wavelength, Chair, I'll also respond to the issue of the payments, especially where you find that officials have certified a payment and then you find out later on that the quality was not good. That problem rests with mostly, it happens because of corruption. It happens because of corruption. Why? Because how the construction projects are structured is such that the professional services are independent from the contractors, which are the construction companies. And the professional services or the professional engineers are the ones that are supposed to certify the work that has been done by the contractor. But the problem is the fees of the professional engineers is a percentage of the total value of the project. What then happens, or what we have seen, is that the professional engineers and the contractors, first of all, collude, where the contractor would just balloon this project to such a high value, and then automatically the fees of the professional services increase. That's the first thing. But the second thing, because in the construction industry, they see it as a norm to have what we call variation orders. They create variation orders. So somebody will come, a professional engineer will come and certify a specific aspect of the project and leave. And as the project goes on, somebody else come and sit and look at the same thing but disputes what has already been certified. Means that whole thing must change to something else. Must mean that a certain part of the construction now has to be demolished, and it goes on and goes on and goes on. But further to that, we've seen that officials as well as professional engineers also collude to complete a project, and payments are made, but the quality of the construction is compromised. What are we doing in those aspects? We are working on frameworks for infrastructure projects, working with the CIDB to come up with a framework of how we can better the implementation of infrastructure in government in general. And we are hoping that through that we can curb this abuse that is happening in the system insofar as the compromise of quality and the collusion that is happening. But I think government, and this is now personally my view, is that government needs to move to a point where government starts owning its own IP. So, what I mean by that is that if you're going to construct a bridge, before you go out on tender for the construction of the bridge, government should already at that point in time own the design of the build of the bridge, the feasibility studies and everything. So that when the contractor comes into play, or if you need to change a contractor at the point, some point in time, you don't change the design, you don't change the value of the project, you don't change a whole host of things. But it's a problem because we don't own our own IP, and what happens is that professional engineers, if you have a problem with the ones you've appointed currently and they have to go away and you appoint another one, the second one that's going to come is going to change the whole thing from your design all the way down, and it's a problem.
For instance, thinking aloud, building of schools.
Yes.
Why are you going to have different plans with different schools and so on and so forth, whereas you're supposed to have this, whatever you call it, the prototype,
yes,
of a school that you want is there.
Yes.
If I give it, you go and build this.
Yes.
Rather than for every school, somebody must go and draw and spend money and charge you and so on and so forth. But I think these are the things. I hear the sixth administration laser saying, can we start doing things different so that we can say after they say, this is what we changed, that's how things used to be, so that we get a better value for money, so that our people get better service delivery.
Yes.
Some of the risks that you are talking about, where people will give a go ahead for a defective project, for instance, how do we stop that?
Yes.
By looking at the person who certified the thing and say, we're blacklisting him or her, and he's no longer going to do business, amongst other things.
Yes.
I'm just saying that I would like to see some qualitative change, yes, in some of the things that we do. That's what this committee has been saying.
Yes.
And we must work together.
Yes. And some of them, part of what we are doing, in addressing all these issues we have raised and in addressing the root causes that we have mentioned, is that the first and the most biggest thing that we identified to do in the new coming financial year is an adequate government-wide risk assessment on procurement, so that we identify the high probability of failures as well as the high impact. Because we don't have an unlimited capacity, with the limited capacity that we have, we can then focus it to the things that matters the most. We're not saying everything, we can't reach everything, but we're saying let's have a structured way to focus the little resources that we have to the things that matters the most. And then the second thing is that we've started building a very good and solid relationship with AG themselves, because where we lack capacity to monitor, so in areas of deviations and expansions, we can't go and monitor all of them, especially the ones where we have supported or approved with conditions. It's not easy for us to go back there and say, well, have you met the conditions and what has happened? Our agreement with the AG is that all the deviations that would have been, in actual fact, we give them a deviations report, and they audit the deviations. So when the teams go down to the institutions, they already have the list of deviations for that institution, approved or not approved. First, to check that all the ones that were not approved actually did not go ahead. But because what we have seen over the time is that sometimes we do not even support, but the department still go ahead and do it anyway. But similarly, the ones that we have approved with conditions, that the departments have met the conditions prior to deviating, and they've deviated within the parameters of the conditions. Then lastly, the ones that we have then supported have been implemented according to the way they've been supported. And make sure that then the projects have been working as they have been supported. And that is the unfortunate monitoring approach that we've had to take, because we do not have the capacity, while AG have teams that go to all the departments to audit the departments, and we ask them to look at this. as well, but mostly to also mitigate the risk where we have supported. Sometimes the institutions mislead us and they do not submit certain information that would have been critical to the request, but AG would be able to pick it up and report it as such. So that's why you'll find that sometimes National Treasury would have approved a deviation, but AG would still declare it irregular because the institution would have misled the National Treasury.
Thing that I noted here. In terms of your note, when you were reading to us, there are things that are there for you to note. And then amongst others, you indicated that the accounting officer would then note the deviation that was done by the accounting officer.
Yes.
But in some instances, you then find that upon your investigation or engagement, you'd then find that that was not to be deviated.
Yes.
And then you then further declare that as an irregular expenditure or whatever.
Yes.
So one would want to ask, in terms of such an irregular expenditure, what is the corrective measure there? And maybe lastly, Chairperson, as the office is the procurement, the senior procurement office, and we find that departments would then, through either implementing agents or through the departments themselves, they would then submit the procurement plans before the execution of the procurement.
Mm.
So how do we then say these procurement plans are relevant to the execution of the certain department? Maybe for argument's sake, maybe you'd find in public works where they would employ the extended public works program people there, you'd find that they would then have trainings, but that trainings would, one, not speak to what they are doing, two, they would not speak to the service delivery. Because in some of these programs that government would want to take out to the people on the ground, one, is for them to become sustainable. Two, is for those programs to have an exit strategy. But then when you find maybe a program that doesn't even plant trees, for argument's sake, but they would then take the participants to be trained on tree pruning, and the relevance of that plan to the business, to the actual business plan of that sector,
yeah,
how would you then speak to that in before maybe allowing them to execute their procurement plan? Thank you so much.
I see honourable members are tempted to, we've got about 15 minutes to finish. Honourable Tihani?
I thought today you gave us the freedom.
There was freedom in the first round. The other rounds are limited.
Okay, I am tempted, Chairperson, to ask this question. I have heard no response when it comes to monitoring and support program. You normally, even if you don't want to call it a training, after that you don't give them the certificate. And as you continue in your responses, you say sometimes you are being misled by the report. So I'm thinking, because even the lawyers, when they don't act according to the rules, we meet them on the street doing nothing. So my question is, don't you think that this certificate can try and assist, so that if ever they don't follow the correct procedure, at the end they are being taken away, and they won't be able to do any work with the department whatsoever any day? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, there are formal training processes, either through our universities or through the National School of Government or accredited training providers, where they would get credits and would get certificates. The workshops that Basani's unit is doing is specifically to something that they found maybe in a bid review process, where they found that one department has got difficulty in understanding certain elements of instruction. So they would go there and just informally have workshops. But it is, in actual fact, the responsibility of the accounting officer to make sure that his people are trained. And it's something that we, as National Treasury in the OAG's office, that has a capacity building unit, to go through accreditor training for their own purposes. So if Treasury facilitates and accredits the training material, and then the service providers are then, through the SACWA process, can provide that training. Are we going to continue with maybe answering some of these? I just wanted to highlight, Chair, maybe the progress on the committee. We are in the process of establishing that committee. We are waiting for a submission to go to Minister to give effect to the delegation of this committee. And it's going to be an interdepartmental in National Treasury committee that's going to be consisting of public finance, ALM, IGR, so that everybody is aware of departments that they are specifically responsible for, that they can see what kind of deviations are coming through that has an impact on the public finances and the budget. So we are also looking at delegating these deviations to the provinces, and that delegation must also be signed off by Minister. So a lot of the provincial and municipal and provincial public entities will go to the provincial treasuries as a responsibility. We will also put thresholds in for this committee, because if we look at the volumes, not every single deviation would go through the committee. So we'll put high value and risk. We'll assess it according to the risk and the value to go through the committee. So that is, it's already started. We are, with our legal unit, drafting the submission of all the thresholds and the delegations that must be signed off. We are also looking at the a maturity assessment, as the Sani had said. In terms of the deviations, like the OAG has done a framework for irregular expenditure, and the other one was framework for, what was the other framework that they did?
No, it's the framework for deviations, yeah. And then the framework for irregular expenditure, and framework for infrastructure.
Yes, so we are busy with a framework for deviations that will take care of the terms of reference for that committee, the thresholds, the delegations and everything. We have the first drafts of that ready. We have also started a process to engage with AG on a monthly basis, which I think is proving to be very valuable. Because they would say that if the two elephants are fighting, the people on the ground is feeling it.
Mm.
So we are talking to each other now on a regular basis so that they can understand the author's interpretation, and when they see that there might be some confusion, help us to word it properly, at least so that people can understand it better. And then also talk to each other on major audit findings. So what we're trying to do now is, in our new planning for the next 5 years, the OCPO is committed as one of their key performance areas to have an annual support plan wherein we would identify the major themes of audit findings for the last year and address those issues across the board. Because if we start seeing it happening across departments, we want to address it on a global basis. And also do a bit more site visits and bid reviews. And in the interim, while the public procurement bill is out for comment, which we suppose is going to take another 2 years to finalize in its totality until it's promulgated, we have to address some of the problematic areas. It's especially in our instruction notes where there might be some confusion in understanding it, or some conflict in terms of what the act or what the regulation says versus what the instruction is saying. So those are just some of the areas that we are currently addressing to answer some of the questions about what are we doing about it. So we are currently looking at a couple of areas to to solve some of the root causes and not just be operational and be bogged down with doing the deviations, because we saw the deviations are spiking or it's coming up more prominently now. And we, in the last year, have seen what the major root causes are. So one of the areas is to clamp down on what is causing it. And it's basically going to be handled in that framework that we are busy drafting.
I think the other question that was raised on
following up on Honourable Member's question around what happens when something then what we have declared on a regular expenditure, I would request that we postpone that as well, because there is a framework of the processes or the requirements of what needs to be done when anything has been declared irregular, and I think I would need to unpack that for you in a bit of much detail. I wouldn't be able to do justice. Similarly to the process that we follow to decide whether we support a deviation or we decline it or anything of the sort. I would request to then, I can talk to it now, but I don't want to put it, it'll be very high level, and I don't think I would give you enough time to then engage and ask the questions in what I will say. Then, Chair, you asked, there was a question on SEPs on the spreadsheet itself. So if you look at that first one where SEPs say that the purchasing of DNA quantification kits at quotation procurement, Moisa, then we said we noted. It's one of those that they have gone and they've done it themselves without requesting for our approval or anything of the sort. And they just came back to report that we have deviated and we appointed LT Tech for 4.3. That is why we said we note the deviation. What I'm not certain at the moment, and I'll just have to try and find it, is whether we supported it as a deviation and said okay, or did we say no, it's not justifiable, we noted, but it's irregular. And what we do, when we declare something irregular and it has already been done, we CC the AG on the letter to the department and we send the copy to the AG as well. But I will quickly try and find it once we're done responding, and I'll give you a clear indication. Then there was another one on extension. Yeah, but that was an extension, eh?
Yeah.
Sorry, Chair, while they are looking, there was one also on the drones of subs. Yeah, on the drones. It states it's confidential, the quotation process. I'm talking under corrections. Police services sometimes they have projects that they don't really want the public to know that they are busy with projects or operations. So they need to have companies that are vetted and not supply that information to the whole of the community. And I think it's more operations than it is that it's something untoward, you know. It's, I don't know if I'm explaining it properly. But we can look at
the application.
Please do.
I see it marked. Yeah. That, I couldn't see where it was. Right there at the bottom. So
the confidentiality aspect is the reasons why they didn't want to go to open. So they asked for a process of quotation and limit that quotation to a certain number of suppliers, because of they cannot expose that information to large number of service providers. So it does not mean that it's confidential in a sense that we don't know about it, or it was the reason why it was impractical for them to go out to the broader market.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Lipelle water. Okay, let me put to the top. Yes. Okay, and what was the question? Yes. So I think on the Lipelle water, I believe that we've covered it. I've covered it when I explained what we mean by we noted. To say that it means that they have done it already as a single source, and if they've written single source, I think chances are we would have declared it irregular, because what we call a single source must come to the National Treasury for approval, and only a sole supplier is within the mandate of the accounting officer.
On that level, the matter that was raised by Honorable Gaiso was that we there see under the supplier, mm-hmm. it is written the top 15 hotel chains. And then the question was, what is the rationale behind the top 15 hotels? Because we are advocating to support the emerging entrepreneurs as well. What is the criterion that says this top 15 hotels are the only ones that are eligible for that, vis-a-vis the amount, a tender amount that would as well be given to such? Thank you very much.
Thank you. That is the SAUA one, not Lipelle Water. The top 15 hotel chains are the chains, the hotels that, so these top 15, first of all, talks to international travel. It does not only talk to South African markets. So what they have found is that they've done an assessment that assesses the providers of accommodation closer to the airports where the crew travels to. And that's the first thing. But the second thing, so they were saying that we can't go on an open bidding process if, say, for example, we are in France and the crew needs to stay in France, because then it means that we need to issue a tender to France, then we need to issue a tender to Brazil or whatever the case that may be. Can we rather identify the top 15 hotel chains that we can find in the majority of destinations that SAA travels to and where the crew sleeps, and bid and confine the bidding and the quotation process to those ones rather than going out on tender? Is there anyone else here that I haven't addressed?
Yes, and I take it are the ones that you are going to come back with.
Okay.
Right? As I said, I think this is the first bite from the honourable members, and as you said, it's a big risk area, and I think if our impact must be felt, I think we must have grips on it, because what happens with SCOPA like auditors is after the effect.
Mm.
So we want to be proactive so that we don't wait until things go wrong and then we say how to correct. Let's try and be proactive. Honourable members, can I thank the office of the Chief Procurement Officer? And we'll definitely be hearing from us to get another date where we must again engage. And on that day, as I said, I don't want to look at you as the Office of Chief Deviation. We'll be talking about procurement. That's saying, I think it's an area that we really, really want to have the whole procurement to have a better grip of. And as I said, that a very important thing, is that we look at the budget as one of the instruments that we are going to use to transform the economy, and want to ensure that we're in the same wavelength as far as it is concerned, right? So it's critical. So I think the starting point that they will have to be the bill. Let's look at it. This bill has been there forever, right? I don't know why is it taking forever. And I must say, what is the act that we're using for procurement now? TRIPPFA?
Yes.
TRIPPFA. You are 90-10 rule, you are 80-20 rule, so on. Those things are just this, there's just this empowering their people. I think there are no two ways about it. It's high time that we revisit that and would like to assure ourselves that we're doing it. Yes, yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I would want to ask permission that we bring the whole team of chief directors so that we can also meet you know, the honourable members, and you can see the faces of the people that is managing those different areas of the OCPO's office. Then also on the public procurement bill, I don't know if you would recall that it served in 2018. It was going to be put on the agenda for cabinet in just before December, and then they didn't allow it to go through because of the elections that was going to happen in the next year. And a year after, only we could manage to get it onto the cluster. And I think there was also some confusion in terms that they thought it was going to be a bill to be enacted instead of we just needed approval for it to go out and comment. So some of the technicalities that happened between the first time it wanted to serve and going now. So at least it's going to, I think it's already published. It was published yesterday. It's going to be published this week, if I'm not mistaken, for comment.
Okay. And remember that on that meeting, we definitely want the DG to be there with your, whatever you bring from your team. Let also the DG to be there. Well, this thing of a committee, you said you are still trying to set up the committee. Why does it take more than a year to set up a committee? You see, so. But I think the next time we meet, we should be having that, because it means until now you have only one person approving the deviations of billions of friends. That can't be correct. Yeah, but let's honourable members, if there are issues that come to your mind that would like them to address when they come back, let's give those matters to Darren. So that he can send it to them. So by the time they come back, we've got a more of a holistic engagement. But thank you very much. On the agenda, are there any announcements, Darren? I remember this takes us to the end of this meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.